Welcome to Printing Money, the insider's perspective on finance and investment in the 3D printing industry. Here's your host, Danny Piper.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 16 of the Printing Money podcast. We are back today to talk about where things are in the public markets. And joining me, I have Troy Jensen from Cantor Fitzgerald. Hey, Troy.
Hey, Danny. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming back. It's middle of March Madness in the college basketball world. It seems like there might be a parallel to the madness going on in the 3D printing world.
I love March Madness. Fun time of year, right?
It is. Certainly for anybody who likes college sports and basketball, it's a great time. It's an exciting time. So last time we got together, we were in New York, and it was interesting at AM Strategies. You had the sort of the flagship, you know, ending of the conference with the CEO panel. And I just can't think there's probably been a more challenging time to be a CEO in the 3D printing world. And just wanted to kind of chat a little bit about that, because, I mean, you had a great panel. And I'm curious that for those that weren't there, maybe I should set the stage for a second. You had Troy on stage, and you can picture the scene. You've got Rick Fulop on one end. You have Zeif from Stratasys on the other end of the stage. And in between, you had Brad Krieger from Velo and Sam O'Leary from SLM in the mix. So just kind of gauging your thoughts, I mean, what was your expectation and sort of feedback from that crowd?
Yeah, so hats off to AMS. They did a nice little conference there. It was a fun three-day event. It's interesting. I thought the whole theme of the conference was a lot about just collaboration and scale, you know, consolidation, partnerships, whatnot. But, you know, I definitely was kind of trying to be confrontational on profitability. That's kind of been my, you know, preaching comment to the management teams over the past kind of year or so, you know, that the industry's kind of failed to have that for the most part. But yeah, fun conference. I always love Sam. Sam's honest. We had the metals guys, right, that are doing really good right now. You can argue, you know, margins for some of them aren't healthy, but just system sales seem to be really strong. But yeah, it was a good event.
You had really focused in on sort of profitability and getting profitable, and it kind of created what I've kind of perceived as two themes coming out of that. And in the middle, sort of with Brad, who I thought, by the way, Brad did an excellent job of staying right where he needed to be. I mean, Velo 3D is in a tough spot from a cash position and margin position. He was extremely adept at answering questions, staying right where he needed to be. And same thing with Sam O'Leary. I thought Sam did a phenomenally good job. And they kind of put output in the bucket of specialization. And these are the kind of companies that are trying to hone in on what they do really well and make that profitable. And I think that's one category, is the specialization. And then you had sort of the theme of scale. And this is where it wasn't just Yoav Zeif from Stratasys, but you had earlier in the event, you had Yoav Stern from Nano Dimension. You had Avi Reichendahl get up from Nexa 3D. You talk about how we all need so much scale to grow and to make this all profitable. Well, scale was the answer and not specialization. So not to say that either one's right or wrong. I think there's a point where the smaller companies need to prove that they can make what they do profitable. And I think there's some in between that aren't there yet that don't know which way to go. And then with Stratasys, having made the investment in Covestro and having the material side of their business, they are probably the one ready to scale, and that does make sense for. And I think, you know, the question is going to be for some of the companies in the middle, and that's going to be hard. And I think, you know, Rick Fulop probably is in that category of, if he had money to scale, he'd probably love to do it. But at the same time, if you can't get it, and we'll probably talk more in depth on those. But one of my favorite comments after the event was from Materialize's CEO. Brigitte had posted on LinkedIn, and she said about 3D printing, it's a slow revolution, but the potential for AM remains large. And I think we all agree that with that. And this was in comment, really, I think about your panels and she was thankful. She said, we need to focus on cost, hat tip to you, quality and expertise. and then application by application, and collaborate in an open model to make it happen in a profit and sustainable way. So I think that's sort of a, I think she nails it quite well. I've always been impressed when she presents. So that's probably why, as we may end with her, because they have sort of the one of the better stories on growth and yeah. things going on in the corner. So in this last Q4. And so I know not everybody's reported, but maybe we should just jump into some of these and maybe give us sort of how you're looking at the market from the public research side of the world.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. So, and speaking on profitability, you know, the only one in the industry, it really has been Stratasys, right? You know, the metric that they focus everybody on is a non-GAAP net income and or operating income. And it has been kind of running around, you know, I like to say 2-3% for those guys. So, they're the only profitable company in the space, but even at that low level of non-GAAP profitability, you're still burning cash, right? So they need higher levels of profitability or getting to, you know, free cash flows and cash flow positive and whatnot situations. So Stratasys did put up one of the better quarters. You know, I'm going to focus probably more on full year results here, right? Because we got everybody for the most part done except Velo on the hardware side. It was we saw a lot of consistency on systems and hardware being down. But other guys kind of manage consumables better or manage costs better, right? For you know, for the profitability side or lack thereof, right? But anyway, so Stratasys, they did like $156 million in Q4. It was down, you know, 2% year over year as reported, but it was up 1.3% if you exclude the divestitures of the Stratasys direct manufacturing business, some of that urethane stuff. $110 million came from products. That was kind of flattish, down 1%. But within that, you had system sales down 14% year over year, and consumable sales of $63 million were up about 12%. So Stratasys did a really nice job on driving kind of the consumable business. For the full year, Stratasys did $627 million in revenues. They would say it was up 1.3% ex MakerBot and SDM, but down about 4% as reported. You know, within that, products were 433. They were down 4% for the year. But the system revenue, what I kind of hinted to, that was $188 million in the quarter, or excuse me, for the year, down about 16%. From the prior year level, but consumables are up 8.2% for Stratasys. So Stratasys has done a better job on profitability, right? So the argument on scale, they've got, you know, gross margins of 52, you know, at the higher end of the industry. I'm going to report kind of everybody's gross margins here as we go through them. This was their 10th consecutive quarter of non-GAAP profitability. You know, so hats off to them. For their outlook for next year, they talked about revenues of $630 to $645 million. Versus just under 630, so they're talking about slight growth this year, and that operating margins of 2.5% to 3.5% non-GAAP basis. For them, the drivers, you know, it's really a lot about dental now. The F3300, right, their big FDM platform, you know, RPS, they talked a fair amount about, you know, getting some wins for those guys for the SLA product, and then the H350. But, you know, Danny, I'll let you kind of hit it.
Yeah, no, I think a couple of things that jumped out. I think, you know, when you exclude the divestitures, right, they're still up a little bit, which is good. I think one of the things, though, that also probably needs to be factored in and it'd be interesting to see is they did acquire Covestro. And so there's a little bit of a bump from that acquisition. And that probably drove up the consumable side of the business, because I want to jump in and say how great the consumables was up. That's just showing that demand and usage continues to grow. And I think that part's fantastic. I think the Covestro acquisition is going to augment that. You know, on the margins, I think, you know, with the 52% was, I think, on the product margins, it gets weighted down a little bit by some of their services. But it made me think, and I last night went and looked, sort of, I think, one of the probably the preeminent companies, and their numbers aren't perfect when we get into the idea of gross margins for equipment companies. DMG Mori, if you look at their, they haven't reported end of year numbers, but they have about a 60% gross margin on a trailing 12 months, which I think is really interesting for capital equipment companies. So So, you know, Stratasys is doing a great job, I think, with 52%. Because I, to me, that was like, it was remarkable. I thought it was going to exceed some of the others. But they're all from capital equipment companies anyways. That's a fantastic margin. So it was interesting to see how DMG, who continues to move into additive, has very good margins by which they can play with as well. One thing also on Stratasys that kind of came out recently was they did pick up the IP from Arrivo, which was the continuous carbon fiber 3D printing. So it'll be interesting. I think they largely picked that up for basically the cost of the transactional work with Sherwood Partners, because none of the equipment was left, from my understanding, at Arrivo. But where that might be beneficial, just speculating here a little bit, is Stratasys was an investor in 9T Labs. I hope that they can collaborate with 9T, because 9T has the expertise on continuous carbon fiber 3D printing. And there's some interesting IP that goes into that. So hopefully Stratasys can find a way to monetize that in a meaningful way, because there's some good stuff there.
Yeah, when I do talk to Yoav about the continuous carbon, he'll call out 9T investment, and obviously this will bode well for that too. So that's one thing that would fit nicely with their portfolio. One thing I'll point out, guys, remember, Nano Dimensions had made a $16.50 offer for Stratasys back in late December. And I don't think Stratasys has really responded to that yet, which has been kind of weird. And they started off their call talking about how they're not going to talk about the strategic, you know, alternatives or, you know, wealth maximization that, you know, they're pursuing right now. But it's just interesting that that's kind of been a quiet topic. Nano has been quite quiet now for a bit. So we'll see what happens. But Stratasys is in a decent spot with a good balance sheet, right? And healthy cash position. So,
yeah. And I don't know if Stratasys is done yet, right? If I'm under the impression they still had JP Morgan hired to look at their sort of options on the table. And I think everyone just got a little tired of the Nano Dimension. Same old, same old. There's nothing new with that one, but I wouldn't be surprised now that Stratasys has continued to emerge. They've got some growth. If they don't sort of figure out something more strategic overall, longer term, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are some potential acquisitions down the line for them. So,
Yep. Hopefully on software and materials, right? Because that's kind of where the profits and the health of this industry is. So, but hey, I'll jump next. We'll hit 3D Systems. If you're cool with that.
Yeah.
All right. So they reported kind of earlier in the sequence here, Q4, you know, they had a tough quarter really because of a line, their industrial business, they did $64 million for the quarter. It was down 12% year over year. Their health services group was $51 million. That was down 16% for the year. If our total was down about 14%, $115 million in the quarter. Gross margins for 3D Systems is only 42%, versus Stratasys at 52, right? So Stratasys already got a 10-point, head start right there. For 23, the dental and ortho business for 3D Systems was down 39%, right? So that was really a line working off, excess inventory and lower demand for them. But the industrial business, they did $275 million in the year. That was kind of flattish on a year-over-year basis. Health services was $213. That was down 18%, right, from last year. Total was down about 9% for these guys. They did point out that the personal health care, so that would have been the medical modeling business, was up 12% year-over-year. So that health care, and, you know, that will speak to materialize, right, when we hit that, too. That's doing well for them. But gross margins for the year were only 41% for 3D Systems. For them, their outlook for 24 is $475 to $505 million versus putting $488 up this past year. So you're talking flattish. Gross margins of 42 to 44%. They did, probably for the first time, provide an OPEX, a non-GAAP OPEX number. So spending, it's $223 to $238. What's kind of important here is, if you remember, 3D put up a really good third quarter on the expense side. It really was kind of surprised at how much they had cut out of the model. And at the same time, they also had this little payment from United Therapeutics, right? It boosted the gross. But here in the fourth quarter, they had a big step up in spending. audit fees, I think, with new CFO coming on. They had a lot of IT stuff, security stuff, just a whole bunch of things, regenerative spending. But they're guiding for adjusted EBITDA to be break even or better for the year. Their push, obviously, regenerative. You know, this company does have to have some value from some of those investments that aren't generating any revenue right now. But for them, they talk a lot about product refresh. I think Jeff wants to refresh everything in their portfolio. And you know, one interesting thing I've seen them talk about lately is it's the PSLA 270. I just kind of got interested in it because it's a combination of SLA and DLP kind of combined. So they're putting the benefits of both platforms together. But then they've got, you know, their metals doing a little bit better. And like I said, just pretty much a broad-based refresh there.
Yeah, wasn't the PSLA, I think they announced that at Formnext, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a brand new one that came out. You know, one of the questions I had, you know, with Ortho being down, you talked about some of that being the inventory work off that they had with Align. I'm wondering how that's going to continue now that they've got the Cubicure deal at Align. And is that going to start to, you know, continue to suppress that? Because my thought originally was it would take a while to implement the Cubicure stuff, and this hit hard. So it makes sense what you're saying on the inventory wind down. But at some point, if Cubicure wraps up quickly with Align, that might stay down and depressed for a while.
Yeah, exactly. But I think everybody in the industry will say right now we're not quite printing dentures directly. So Cubicure is probably a year and a half to two away from being there. I think the competitors are also probably in that range too. So we'll see if, you know, 3D and others kind of can get a solution there also. But I just imagine, I mean, if you remember coming out of COVID, everybody was, you know, weak on supply, right? We had all these supply chain disruptions. So everybody beefed up their inventory levels. Obviously Align did too of materials, right? And then demand slows down. So you get the double whammy effect of burning off inventory in a slower demand environment. And so I do think that's probably hooked to bottomed here and we'll see a little recovery. But yeah, how long does it stay, and can Cubicure, you know, effectively displace everything they're doing right now, you know?
The one of the notable things that I've seen is that Jeff did a, you know, fairly aggressive, you know, cut with the team. And there's a lot of really senior people that are gone. I think Andy Johnson's going to be out here probably in the next month or two when we talked at AMS. You got Rajiv Kulkarni, who's now the CSO at Axtra 3D in Charlotte. And there's another, you know, quite a few other big names. So these cuts have been coming even at the very senior position of very long tenured people there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, the industry did need this. You know, 3D Systems was losing money here in the fourth quarter, right? So remember, they had big debt. You know, they did a really nice job of getting a zero coupon convertible out there for $460 million, I want to say. But, you know, that comes due, right? So,
right.
But they've been buying it, you know, at like 75% of face. So they've retired some of their debt. So, I think Jeff gets it. He's got to kind of get this company. I think everybody right now knows they got to get to assume some base level of revenues and let's get our cost structure below that so we're kind of sustainable.
Yeah, and the regenerative bet that they're making, you know, very, you know, for those that are the longer term investors that want to think out in the horizon, that's an interesting market to look at. If you look at Beko, who's probably the big competitor for them in that space, they've gone from $11 million in revenues back in like 2019 to over $200 million this past year, and they have 75% gross margin. So if they can pull into that market, it's going to be slow to build. But if they can sort of replicate what Beko's doing and that market takes off, because there's bioprinting in there, there's also the pharma for all the testing and development work that also applies to them. That's high gross margin business, and that's not one that the traditional other 3D printing players like Stratasys are doing. So it could be a big win for them. So that's a little, you know, secret gem I think that they have sitting in their bag.
Yep, exactly. And I try to have them call that out, the expense side of that, Danny, on their earnings call, because to me they're not profitable. But I mean, you strip that out, I think their base business is profitable. Without the regenerative spend. But, you know, regardless, it's in there now. So,
yeah.
But let's move on. Next one, we got, you know, a few more to do here. So, Mark Forged, they put up a pretty good quarter. I was kind of impressed in the fourth quarter sequential, right? They did, For hardware, they did $15.4 million in the fourth quarter. That was at was down 27% year over year. Consumables were just under $6 million. That was down about 10% year over year. You know, combined, they did $24 million in the quarter, down from 29 last year. Gross margins 49.5%, right? So they're kind of right there at 50, just underneath Stratasys, but not nearly at the scale of Stratasys. You know, for their year, you know, their hardware business was $59 million, down 14%. That's you know, I keep hitting this double digit teens decline in hardware for everybody in 23. But their consumables were up 2% to $24 million combined. They were kind of down 7%. You know, for them, they really got four bets going on right now. I spent a couple of dinner and a part of a day with Shai in New York visiting some clients. But obviously, it's the PX100, right? So that's at you know, Digital Metal. They got the Digital Forge. This is software. And then it's the FX10 product cycle and the FX20. They seem pretty confident on getting growth next year, specifically as the FX10 kind of matures and goes from big pipeline into kind of shipping, you know, generally available. But they talked about a guidance of 95 to 105 million for the year, you know, up from 93, so up slightly like Stratasys. You know, gross margins 48 to 50, and non-GAAP operating or a loss, excuse me, of you know, about 42 million. So, you know, Mark Forge, they've got a nice balance sheet still for the kind of burn rate level. But they do need to almost double their revenues from here to get to a spot to where they're kind of break even without, you know, really changing the operating structure for those guys right now.
Yeah, that's where when I looked at it, they got something in the neighborhood of like 117 million in cash. And when you've got these operating losses around 42 to 47, they have good gross margins to your point. But I mean, with $44 million in gross profit, they have $47 million in G&A alone, $37 million in sales and marketing, and $40 million in R&D. So even if they double, they probably still need to trim up and lean up a little bit. And I think otherwise, they've got obviously some time to do it. But that's one where I think they're going to have to grow and make some, you know, tougher decisions if they're going to continue on as a standalone company.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think their software is doing really well, right? They've always been kind of viewed as kind of the over the top, over the air, kind of best kind of software platform. And we'll see if the Digital Forge hits. That could be a nice margin business, but yeah, they do get some good product cycles. Last of the hardware companies, we'll just hit quickly. So Desktop Metal, they've also reported their Q4 results. They did $52.3 million in revenue. It was up nice sequential, but down about 13.5% year over year. Gross margins for desktop was only at 34%. It's a little bit of trouble there. Their adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was -$9 million. You know, product revenue for these guys was $46 million, down 16% year over year. Once again, teens type of declines in product. For their full year, they did $189 million in revenue, down 9%. The product side was $168 million, down 11%. For their outlook, they talked about $175 million in revenue to $215 million compared to the $190 they did, so kind of flattish for them. For, you know, Rick, now the story seems to be a lot about gigacasting. He talked a lot about kind of humanoid robots and AI. He talked a lot about dental and their Scana partnership with Align. You know, less so on kind of metals as, you know, we traditionally knew desktop is.
So, that's an interesting, I think Desktop Metal is always one of the more interesting companies to talk about. I mean, Rick is never short on ideas. And so, I don't know where the AI and humanoid robotics sort of fits in the broader scheme of where he's going. And I can understand sort of the broad array of, you know, investments that they've made today. And this is one where I kind of wonder in those themes we talked about earlier of scale versus specialization, what happens with Desktop Metal? I think they're, you mentioned sort of the adjusted EBITDA, sort of just under 10 million now. So with the cash that he has, I think he can turn the corner on the company. because a lot of these are non-GAAP expenses, so the losses aren't as big. But the question is strategically, where do they go? There was a S-3 filed on February 14th to raise some additional securities. It's so hard in this market. So, I think nobody tries as hard, I think, as Rick, in terms of, of hitting the vast array of either capital markets, debt markets. I don't think anybody's done it probably better than him, but there's a question of where does the focus come from and he's got, a couple product lines that, the Envision Tech product line that he bought, that's, got some profitability to it. You've got sort of the X1, and do they start specializing or do they continue to go further into things like AI and humanoid? And that to me probably is going to be a tough call. So we'll see how investors respond to that.
Yeah. Remember, so I think he has a net debt position of about $27, $28 million. So Rick did that convertible, $115 million convertible. I think he's around 90 or something. I think that might be the math. So he's got a net debt position right now. But he talked about on the call too about the industrial photopolymers, right? So, just at his burn rate, they also talked about just kind of cutting more costs. Sounds like they might kind of like pause investments in the P50, right? Just because, right now it's just not materializing and they need to just kind of cut off the spending to kind of reach this stability level where they're, kind of cash flow neutral. So, but yeah, we'll see what happens because, to me, Envision Tech is most of the photopolymer business, right? So, and that's, the Einstein, that's the 8K, that's the other materials are doing great in the dental stuff. So,
well, it's always going to be sort of a, a wild ride when Rick's at the helm. So we'll see what comes next here.
Yeah, exactly. So then I'll just we'll round out a few more companies here. Nano Dimension reported they did $56 million in revenue. It was up 29% year over year. But I haven't seen a breakout. How much of that is additive versus, more robotic or whatnot. But, Proto Labs, they put up a decent quarter. I think the service bureaus are doing better than the hardware companies. I think, you heard me highlight a lot of these companies that are having, double-digit declines in their product sales. I think it's really easy for a company to step on the brakes on CapEx, right? But I think they're giving more to service bureaus then, right? They're still getting their parts made, but they're just kind of not buying the internal capacity. So Proto Labs did pretty decent. Their hubs business was growing nicely for them. If you look at their 3D printing, it was like $20 million in the quarter, the old Fineline acquisition out of Raleigh, right? And it's grown dramatically since, but that's when it was up 4%. For the year, they did $84 million in additive, up about 7% year over year. One of my other favorite companies, and you talked about Brigetta, she's just a darling. She's going to do a great job there. But they put up, her first quarter now, kind of running, Q4. It was partially hers, I'd imagine. But their 3D software business, they did about $11 million in the quarter. That's kind of been flattish on a sequential basis for like 3 years now. So just a little stagnant. The medical business was up, it was 15% year over year in Q4. It did about $28 million. And then the manufacturing was 26. They get 45% gross margin, so a little bit below kind of Stratasys. But I think that service bureau business is lower gross margins and they don't have the materials, right? Like some of these, hardware specific companies did. For the year, their 3D software is $44 million, up 2%. Their medical was $101 million, up 20% year over year. So medical's growing nicely. For them has been CMF and knees still and kind of models and stuff. And then the manufacturing was $110 million, up about 7%. So they did a good job growing all three of their businesses in 23. They guided for revenues of 265 million euro to 275 million, versus reporting 255. So they're guiding up nicely. I think having that exposure to medical kind of helps that. And I think they said they expected all three businesses to grow, annually here in 24. Adjusted EBITDA, they are profitable on an adjusted EBITDA basis. They have a target this year for 11 to 14 million.
Yeah, that's a great story. When you're across the board up in every division that you have, kudos to that team. This has been a hell of a year for all the companies, and well managed, profitable. So I think that's definitely one to watch. I mean, you mentioned Nano Dimension. I couldn't dig in, and at this point, it'd be interesting to see where their growth is going to where it's derived from at this point. I mean, they just have so much cash. I would like to see them come up with an alternative strategy than buying Stratasys. So they are the ones that can make a difference in this industry.
Yep. And so, they're going to do something. Yoav, he's sitting on 1.2, 1.3 billion in revenue or cash, right? So he's just kind of waiting. You know, we talked about this. It's a tough time. He's opened with this, Danny. A lot of these late stage privates that need money, and even these public companies that, you know, got these cost structures that are bigger than their revenues right now. You know, it's someone like Yoav is going to start spending it a little bit soon and collecting some assets here. So it should be an interesting year.
Yeah. So there's a few sort of that we kind of didn't touch on. Velo still hasn't reported Q4 numbers yet. And, we obviously mentioned a little bit about the CEO, and we think, or at least given the difficult situation that he's in, he seems to be managing well, but we'll see what Q4 numbers come out. Fathom is in the middle of a take private transaction we brought up on this podcast earlier. I think maybe it was a couple episodes ago in November that Core had put in an offer that had been accepted. So they're going to take that private. And then full circle of Voxeljet. So
yeah, right. I put it together right when these guys went public, and now they're delisting.
I feel like it's been sort of like almost 10 years since we were on stage and you were at Piper and they were going public. And it kind of goes to the point, there was a comment that they had made that the benefits of listing were no longer worth the costs, which include, part of that is the immense time on management for reporting. And as the size of a company, right, if the capital markets were better right now and the public markets were better right now, that might be a different story. But, in the current environment, it's challenging. And it sounds like Anzu Partners has been there to step up and provide them some additional runway with some more debt as part of this transaction. So they're going to delist, I think, on April 1st.
I love Rudy and Ingo. I'll miss those guys. I'll still see them, right? They'll still be around at events and stuff like that. But I wish them all the best. They've been great to me over the years. And they always had a good company, good products, wasn't able to kind of scale like they had hoped. So, but yeah, it hit a couple of years. So Velo does report tonight after the close. For the most part, they've had really, really good year-over-year growth because they're coming off such a small base. And their XC product, Sapphire, is had a lot of backlog that they're kind of shipping into. I expect them to put, it might be more flattish now year-over-year growth because they have kind of caught up to their growth rate. But when I met with Brad at the AMS conference, he talked a lot about cost structure too. Or for them, remember they had something like 6% gross margins,
right?
Or 6 to 10. I don't want to get misquoted, but it was low. But a lot of that was this whole supply chain problem, and supposedly they pre-bought stuff or made their own, and they're working that through the system now, and hopefully they can start to report better gross margins. They got a long way to go. That's another one that announced kind of a strategic review by the board that we haven't heard anything about yet. But, I do think they've got really good software, what they can do in metals, and metals has been kind of the strongest area realistically. I do think there's some value there.
Yeah, no, I think that what I'll look for tonight and for everybody else is what does the backlog look like coming out of Q4? Because they had always a growing backlog, but I think out of Q3, it started dropping off. The margins, if they can turn the margin situation on gross margins around, right, so that they can become financeable, that will be helpful. I think Needham is their investment bankers, and they filed sort of another prospectus a month ago, so they can do another offering. I don't think they're in market with it at this point, but... I think they are probably all waiting for this announcement and seeing how Q4 shapes up. So
Yep, yep. And others you hit to Fathom, you know, they went private. I wish them the best. I always loved Rich and team over there. And Ryan, right, was fantastic to work with. SLM, I do think, you know, we're not going to hear them report because Nikon doesn't call it out. But I just think in general, being in additive, being in metals, they were kind of had some momentum. You know, they've done really good with this NXG platform, right? I'd imagine they probably put up a pretty good fourth quarter, pretty good year. Xometry is the other one that, you know, I typically kind of touch on too. They guided below consensus. They, you know, they're hard to say what how much of their business is really additive. They're kind of a broker, right, for any type of like kind of quick jobs. But yeah, interesting times. Like all these valuations too, we're not far off of 15-year lows.
Right.
You always look at Materialize. That's one that's like at or near 15-year lows right now. And it's insane because it's just such a better company now than it's ever been.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think for all these, this whole industry is sort of, you know, it seems like it's now as hard of a bottom as we can get. I feel like I say that every, the last probably 6 months, but we're getting there. I mean, you mentioned SLM and Nikon, and I think there's a lot more behind that story just from the stuff that Nikon's doing. They have an incredible team also back in Japan, in addition to the SLM team. They've also made an investment into hybrid manufacturing technologies for hybrid systems. So they're in this for the long haul, for sure. So it'll be, you know, I think that's going to be an interesting one. HP still, that's somebody we really don't cover on this one just because it's a rounding error in the bigger HP picture and portfolio, but they've been trying to do some strategic things as well. So it'll be interesting to watch how they play in the market as well. So both on the metals and polymer side. So
interesting. It feels like there's going to be one transaction and then probably a whole string of things will happen, right? Because everybody's going to feel like they need a partner or,
yeah,
or the market opened or we can get it done now. And
this, I think the second part of this year is going to be a lot different than the first part of this year. So I think this is the pivotal year.
Yep. Yep. And it's the end of the month already. It's time to do channel checks again and try to figure out how Q1 closed, right? So,
exactly.
You're right. You're either in, you know, in earnings season or getting into it or it's always happening. But
well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I know we're going to see each other in June with Rapid. So
voting.
Yeah. Exactly. So looking forward to it. And thanks, everybody, for joining us on episode 16 of the Printing Money Podcast. Thanks again, Troy. Everybody, have a great day.
You've been listening to Printing Money, the insider's perspective on finance and investment in the 3D printing industry. For more information about what you just listened to or for past episodes, visit www.3dprint.com.